Marisol and Melissa typed Jennifer's name into Google. And when they saw the results, they were like, what is Alex thinking? Why her? Jennifer had represented high-profile cops in murder cases. She had successfully defended an off-duty officer charged with killing an unarmed Black woman. Then she represented a white police officer named Jason Van Dyke. If that name sounds familiar, that's because Van Dyke was the cop who killed a 17-year-old Black boy named Laquan McDonald. It was a horrific case that received national attention, both because of the shooting, Van Dyke fired 16 shots at the boy, and because it took over a year and a lawsuit for the CPD to release the dash cam video of the incident. The case and the allegations of a cover-up prompted mass protests throughout the city. 16 shots. How could someone who defended cops turn around and defend their brother? Someone accused of killing an officer.
I didn't feel comfortable about that.
Neither did I.
They knew Alex was getting desperate, but still, this woman? Really?
But he was a bit adamant, and of course, he was frustrated, and he's like, go talk to her. Let's see. He was very optimistic about her.
In March 2020, Marisol and Melissa drove to Blagg's office. The woman who greeted them was not what they expected. When Melissa and Marisol met her, Jennifer Blagg wasn't dressed up. She wasn't wearing makeup. She definitely didn't sound like some slick city lawyer. She grew up in a town called Hamburg, Arkansas. Population 2,400. She just might be Hamburg's second most notable export to Chicago.
Home of Scottie Pippen. This is claim to fame. We lived in a concrete house that was across the cotton field from my grandparents. We had a pet cow named Daisy that I kept in touch with my cow until my mom gave her to a farmer and he promised not to kill the cow. Anyway, that's a whole other story.
Jennifer was a tomboy growing up. She played basketball, hated dresses, and wanted to leave her small town for as long as she can remember. But after college, she settled down in Arkansas and worked in HR. Still, she couldn't shake the feeling that she was meant to be doing something else, somewhere else. So she worked full-time and went to law school at night.
I got a job at first selling pantyhose at Dillard's. I am not a fashionista. I do not like wearing dresses. I do not like wearing pantyhose. It's absolutely hilarious that I would be selling pantyhose and giving women recommendations on if they should use ultra sheer or sheer. You know, I mean, it's just a hoot.
Jennifer eventually walked across the stage in her cap and gown, no pantyhose, of course, to collect her law degree. She moved to Chicago and took on some high-profile cases. She's proud of all of them, the wrongful conviction she's overturned, and the police officer she's defended, even though the Jason Van Dyke case was really controversial. It wasn't just the Villa sisters who were skeptical about that one. Jennifer's friends were, too. She didn't represent Van Dyke at trial, but took on his case when she saw the sentence the prosecution was asking for. Blagg wasn't apologetic when talking to the sisters about the case.
They wanted every shot of the bullet to count towards his sentence and it to be a consecutive sentence. If he got sentenced that way, every defendant after him would be sentenced that way. And that's not how the law should work.
Marisol and Melissa were still skeptical, but they were there because Alex asked them to be. So they put aside their own misgivings and told Jennifer that they were certain their brother was innocent. Full stop. And they needed someone good to represent him.
I always take what family says to me with a grain of salt. Not that they would be lying or anything like that, but there's sometimes things that family just don't know.
She's like, well, what makes him innocent? Anybody can say, you know, especially if your family, that your loved one is innocent. What makes him innocent?
For the next 2 hours, the sisters laid out their reasoning. First, the M&M Mini Mart is not in Cobra territory. No Cobra would travel to another gang's turf to rob a store. Second, the confessions from Alex's alleged accomplices, those happened after days of grueling interrogations, the sister said. Then there was the surveillance tape from the Mini Mart. The man who leaps over the counter and starts shooting Officer Lewis, he puts his left hand on the counter to vault over it, That couldn't be Alex, they said. Alex was shot in his left hand 6 months before the crime, and it never fully healed. No way he could put his weight on it to jump over a counter like that.
He has permanent nerve damage to the point where his fingers, they get stiff. Even when he would eat, the way he would hold the spoon, it's not like what a normal person, right? How you would hold the spoon. He can't do that.
Also, they said, it wasn't just his hand that made the idea of him jumping over the counter implausible.
Alex is a chubby dude. He's always been chubby. He's short, chubby, you know, has a hand injury. I mean, let's be logical here.
The other thing was, Alex had presented an alibi that he was arguing with his girlfriend over text messages at the time of the murder. Prosecutors shot that down, arguing he could have just sent a quick emoji as he entered the store. Speaking of the prosecutors, the sisters told Jennifer that they didn't trust them. Their names were Andrew Varga and Nancy Adusi. Jennifer stopped them right there and said, "Wait, you need to understand that I'm friends with Nancy Adusi. We've worked together on a lot of things, and I like her." And right there, the sisters' doubts about Jennifer came rushing back.
I was cringing in my seat. I was like, oh, I want to leave, you know, or like, I don't like her.
They said their goodbyes. And when Alex called to see how the meeting went, they didn't hold back. "She's not right," they told him. "She's not the one." Alex told him he didn't care. If she wanted to take on his case, then he wanted her as his lawyer. Back in her office, Jennifer told her associate attorney, a guy named Eric Bisbee, about her meeting with the sisters.
"From what they told me, it just seemed impossible that Alex would have done this. And then when you have a huge gap in time between, like, the crime and somebody being charged, then you're that always is, as the kids say, sus. There's always shenanigans when there's a cop murder."
Plus, she said, she liked Marisol and Melissa, and she felt bad for them, which, Eric pointed out, is not a good reason to take on a case.
And then Eric was like, "I don't think we should take it." I was like, "Well, I might have already said we would."
So, against his better judgment, Eric went ahead and requested the case file from Alex's previous lawyer.
It was just massive. I remember I showed up one day and we have 5 banker boxes full of documents on the back porch, and I'm just thinking, how are we going to do this? I mean, it was a lot.
He started with the trial transcripts, and right away he thought, this is even worse than I imagined. They've got confessions of alleged accomplices. They've got 3 other people saying that Alex told them that he killed Officer Lewis.
I looked at the summary. I'm like, Jennifer's lost her mind.
He watched one police interrogation after another, recordings of the confessions made by Alex's alleged accomplices, the men who were supposedly at the M&M during the robbery. And nothing in any of them gave him a sliver of hope. Eventually, he got to one of a guy named Melvin DeYoung, and it's the same story Eric heard on all the other tapes. Then Alex was the shooter. He's thinking, this case is open and shut. And then, just as he's about to stop the video, he says something catches his attention. The detectives who've been interrogating Melvin leave the room, but they don't stop recording. And Melvin, once he's alone, he looks up at the camera and he whispers, "It was a lie." Eric looks back into Melvin's face, his eyes staring right into the lens. And Melvin says it again. "It was a lie." This season on Off Duty.
So there was like a bunch of guys that had attacked him that knew his location. Who would have known that information?
He says, "I had a brain-eating amoeba."
Next thing you know, they got the beating on my door. Boom, 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 boom.
"You know I'm lying to you because I told you from the beginning that I had nothing to do with this."
"There's nothing on this. Are you effing kidding me?"
"Every phase of this experience is something being taken from me."
You have to be a fucking idiot to do this job and win, right? Like, you've got to have some blind faith. I was like, bring it.
The Guardian made repeated attempts to speak with the Chicago Police Department. The department did not have anyone available to answer our questions, a spokesperson wrote in an email. In court documents, officers deny any misconduct. Former prosecutors Nancy Adusi and Andy Varga, along with legal representatives for each party, did not respond to multiple interview requests or a detailed list of questions. Prosecutors denied any misconduct in court papers. No officers or prosecutors have been accused of wrongdoing by officials in connection with this case.
This is The Guardian.